everyone! Welcome to another episode of Ara Ara The We Podcast, and I am your host for today, Vibs. Joining me today is my usual co-host, Amy.
Hi!
And we have another guest for today. So today's topic will be all about gaming and esports, which is something that's very close to my heart. So our guest for today is Mina. Hi, Mina.
Hi, nice to meet you guys. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, I'm sure you're like super busy.
No, it's a pleasure. Genuinely, just any sort of promotion of esports in the region, I'm always happy to be a part of it. So it's good.
Aw.
Yeah. So for our audience to know you more, could you please introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Mina George. I'm the head of esports at GK Group. So I'm in charge of our esports team, which is composed of 76 players plus staff. So we currently have almost 10 different esports teams across the Middle East. And we're currently involved in some major tournaments right now going on, such as the Valorant VRL regional tournament and the Intel Arabian Championship, which is done for League of Legends. And I'm looking forward to seeing where 2022 leads up, since it seems to be very exciting in the realm of esports in the region.
That sounds exciting.
It is super exciting, yeah.
I just want to clear, that's, how do you pronounce it again? GK?
So it's
I've always pronounced it GK.
So I had the same misconception when I first joined. So it's pronounced GK, as it's an acronym, the actual name. So it's GK Games. And GK stands for Game King. So that's why it's called GK. Right. So in the stories, when you see it filled, like it's written G-E-E-K-A-Y, it's G and K is specifically for the acronyms for Game King.
So, honestly thought it has something to do with geek. And then I don't know why they added AY.
Same misassumption. As soon as I joined, I sat to them and I told them the same thing, and they were like, Mina, it's GK. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it's BK. And they're like, no, it's GK. We run the company. I'm like, yeah, you probably know Mandarin. I'm going to shut up now. So it's pronounced GK, not GK. Yeah.
Okay, GK. All right. Yeah. Then. Also, as far as I know, you and Amy, I think you guys are connected in person, or are you guys acquaintances or something?
We are acquaintances majorly online. I think my company does a lot of work with her company. That's it.
They sponsored a lot of our cool PCs. But also, like, super funny story of like how Mina and I met. So I don't know. I don't remember who followed who, but somehow we ended up following each other on Instagram. And then we just started talking because of BoJack Horseman, actually. Because I would post a lot of BoJack Horseman stories because I love BoJack. So anyway, so like we were talking about that. And then I thought like he was a classmate of mine, like back in high school. So, like, I was like, oh, wow, like, I never thought Mina, like, the Mina in my head was the type of guy to, like BoJack. Well, that's interesting. So, like, and then I started, like, talking to him and asking all this random and then, I found out, like, no, different Mina. I'm just really dumb.
Bro, it's so rare to find someone who actually watches BoJack. Like, the thing is, many people go, like, oh, I watched the first few episodes. And I stopped him like, oh, you have no idea what you missed out on.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was fun to connect. Like, there were a few people I connected with actually on Instagram majorly from BoJack. Going like, I'm going to start watching BoJack today. Like, I'm like, yeah, you should finish the whole thing. And I think, I'm trying to remember what was Amy's. I think it was either the second, either it was when BoJack had like an epiphany of what type of person he was. Or whether it was the second last episode. Because those two are the most...
That's true.
But I think the way that I got connected with Mina was in Gamers Lounge Dubai.
Yeah.
So it's a Facebook group here, and I remember when it was announced that you will be spearheading GK's esports organization. Like, you know, a lot of people congratulated you. So I'm like, let me add this guy in LinkedIn. No, because at that point, I was telling Amy many times that I really want to, you know, have connections here, especially in the esports industry, because, you know, having the network really matters.
Correct.
So, I think that's how we got connected at some point and followed you on Instagram. So now, moving on to our questions for today. Correct. So first of all, we want to know your anime and gaming history. How did you personally get into it?
The person who got me into the gaming event side or the esports side of the business is someone who's also on Gamers Lounge Dubai, and he commented very clearly that I should mention him. So it's Omar LK. So he had a store about a few years ago in Jumeirah called Geeky Lizard. So Geeky Lizard used to be a store that used to be a hobby store for most people who wanted to get into board games, card games, whichever. And I just freshly graduated from university. I graduated in aeronautical engineering, and I was very excited to find a job in aeronautical, which wasn't the case. No, it was very difficult. I think I applied to every single major airline, and it was clear that at the time they were looking for people who are not freshers, so I was having a bit of a hard time. So I used to spend a lot of time in the hobby store. And at one point, Omar started to notice I was getting really upset about it and sad, and he was like, hey, you've always been to events and stuff. Why don't you start doing some things in the store? And I don't want to toot too much of myself, but like, I do have this electrical kind of vibe with people. I do genuinely enjoy teaching, and I do like playing with people and having fun with them, especially in real life. So he handed me this, which is a box of Magic the Gathering cards. Yeah. So,
okay.
So wow. I wasn't so sure about it. I loved the board games and everything, but I really wanted to try new things. So he gave me my first deck, and he told me, why don't you start teaching more people how to play it? And I did. Next thing you know, more people started learning how to play the game in the store, and I realized it's a limited place for a limited type of footfall. So I told him, why don't I try taking this to universities in Dubai? And he was like, that sounds like a great idea. And we decided some sort of revenue model between me and him. So where I would sell at the stores, or whatever type of footfall I'd bring from universities to this school, to the university, I'd get some sort of cash. And I was still like 22, and I was really happy because per month I was making like somewhere between 300 to 500 dirhams, and I was so happy. I was like, I'm making bank with gaming. So ecstatic. I would go to different schools and different universities, and Omar would support me as much as he could, obviously. By the end of the day, it's board games and card games. At one point, I started getting connected with a lot of people in gaming, and company, I can't remember its name now, but it used to see what I used to do in the universities with card games and board games. They said, why don't we give you a few of our PlayStations and you can continue doing this in universities? And I was like, oh, let's do this. I started becoming like a gaming roadshow in Dubai. And it was really, really fun. It was solid. It started picking up a lot of traction until it came down to an event where I can't remember. It's Dubai Academy, Academic City. Approached me and they said, why don't you do something for a much larger scale where we invite all these students to one location, they can do like a tournament there. Now I was like, frick yeah. Now keep in mind, I was doing this alone with me, maybe my brother sometimes, and a friend, right? And my promise to their hard work, where they spent like 12 hours with me, was maybe lunch if I had some extra cash. So I didn't have a workforce. I didn't have anyone. And Omar was very busy, obviously, running the store. So I didn't have someone to do this concept. So one day when I was in Geeky Lizard, I happened to be at the store. And there was a gentleman there who was looking for someone to start looking to do more things in esports. And he was looking at doing tournaments across different cafes. And I had met him there. And we connected. And then later on, I asked him if he would be interested in doing this university, like this Battle of Universities thing, like this cup where all university students play together. It was a different concept to what he usually used to do, and he was interested in it. And then I told him, let's do it together. He said, no, why don't you work with me full time? And next thing you know, he gave me my first job in esports. And ever since then, I've just been growing in gaming and esports in the region. So, yeah.
Wow. That sounds a lot, but
yeah,
no, I can imagine what you've been through.
Yeah, like number one, that's like so much work just for one person.
Yeah.
And number two, it's really surprising for me that like a lot of unis here were pretty much very open about having gaming into their schools, because like, I mean, if you're talking about a few years back, it wasn't an accepted thing to like game exactly.
Oh no, you know? it wasn't like full frontal, like the university didn't like really like me being there. They didn't really enjoy it. So they gave me like, so I used to go to the student council. So again, it was all students, right? Like they understood the value of it. Universities didn't really care. Right. So students were like, hey, here's our recreation room. We have 2 hours every week. You can just come down and sit here and teach people. I'm like, I guess, why not? It was never, to be fair, the only university that actually really supported me very heavily was Canadian University of Dubai. And the teacher who was helping me, her name was Miss Reina, she's still alive, hopefully. So she used to help me a lot, and she used to support me. And she gave me, she once gave me the entire auditorium in Canadian University to do a massive event there. And it turned out really, really well. I was very happy with the event, but 99% of the times the universities never were interested in supporting it. And it's just a situation, yeah.
Yeah, I would understand, because even in the Philippines, it only became recently popular to the universities, to the point that I think 2 years ago there's already BS in esports in the Philippines, like Bachelor of Science, I think.
Correct.
So yeah, I would understand why you didn't get that full-on support from universities.
Yes,
but correct. Also, just to ask you this question, how long have you been in the industry, if we're gonna count all of those years?
So I would never consider those university days as esports. I would say it from the day I started my first proper job. It from the gentleman who gave me my first opportunity, it was about 5 years. So I'm going to push it to 6 years now, and it's looking to be strong. I entered esports in the region when it was just starting to mold. It was starting to shape into something. At the time, I don't think anyone took esports seriously. I think it was just something that was done as a marketing tool for many brands, but never something to grow the community or grow the industry in a whole, which is kind of sad. But the more you spend time in esports, the more you'd understand that, I guess
there's,
it's something that had to be. It was a necessary evil at the time. And the more we discuss, the more I'll branch into why it had to happen.
Yeah, and I think people before didn't really think of esports as an actual career.
Yes.
It's just something that you do for fun.
Correct.
You know, but eventually now as we go along, and how many years has esports been, right? But it only became really that popular. But wait, before we all go into esports, I wanted to ask, did you grow up liking video games or anime?
Yes, it was my major escape from anything. No, anime, not necessarily. Anime, actually, so I used to really love football when I was in grade eight. And a few of my friends also who liked football started watching one anime in specific. Okay, and I never liked anime so much until they told me, hey man, Pokemon's anime. I'm like, nah.
Because Pokemon was in English, so
exactly. They had to show me all the proof of the world that it was.
Pokemon in Japanese doesn't work. Like,
it doesn't. I didn't even say no, but this show is in English. You can watch it. And I was like, no, man, it's not. So. I'll just give you an idea, right? Like, of course, at the time, I was very into sports, I was very into football, loved video games and everything, but anime specifically. So the guy was one of the best shooters in our schools, actually one of the best players in the UAE. And he used to do this thing, whenever he'd lose, So just to give you an idea of what anime got me into anime, whenever he'd start losing, he'd just like stand in the middle of the field. Man, we were such dorks. In the middle of the field, I go like, "Bong kai," and I just go into the football field. I'm like, "What's wrong with you, man?" He's like, "Nah, shut up. It's my vibe." I'm like, "All right, dude, do you." And so finally got into peer pressure and started watching Bleach. And I think till today, I know Bleach isn't like considered a tier one anime, but it's the number one anime that I genuinely enjoyed. And just went up from there.
I mean, yeah. I think Bleach is a lot. I mean, it's more of nostalgia, I think, for most people. So don't worry about that. Like, a lot of people enjoy Bleach.
But I'm quite happy that new season's coming out soon. So I'm really happy with that. So that's fine. So, yeah. But, yeah. But video games, yeah. Been playing since I was a kid. I wasn't very popular when I was younger in school. I only started becoming popular when I started getting to sports and like had a bit of like charisma. But then I never had many friends, so video games was my go-to in every sense. So Pokemon was my main video game. Used to love the crap out of it. The second it used to come out, used to buy it. I loved God of War and started playing a lot of Dota. Growing up, that was the first major game that got me into esports. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dota is my ride or die. And funny story, it is the only esports team I don't have. What? Yeah, it's very.
Yeah, you just have seen GK having
Dota 2.
Is it just because of where we are? Like you can't form a team for it?
It's the most unpopular game in the region, man. It's such a shame.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. When I say unpopular, I don't mean from the player base. There's a huge player base. It's just tournament-wise, it's if it's not a random gaming cafe doing a tournament for like 1,000 dirhams, it's not something an organization is going to be interested in doing.
Yeah,
it's a shame.
And I think the learning curve for Dota 2 is really that high compared to other games. That's why it's really hard also for them to get new players, you know.
I wouldn't say that. No, I think Dota had at one point the highest type of player base in this region specifically.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think it's just the care from the publisher itself. Yeah. And if you notice, the most popular games in the region, the ones that have hundreds and $200,000 of prize pools, sometimes millions, are from the publishers that actually really invest in this region, that really do promote their games and promote their players and promote this region, localize their games. Your Steam, sadly, hasn't put in that type of effort in this region. Mm. It's their call. It's their company. No one's ever going to say, "Hey, you should do it this way." But it's a shame for the game that I grew up loving, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. But what I was saying earlier was actually the point of view of people, I guess, in the Philippines. Like, it's hard for them to capture a new audience at this point, especially with all of these new games competing with each other.
Correct.
And if your learning curve is that steep, it's going to be hard for you to get new fan base. And at the same time, as you've mentioned, like there's not much care for people, for new gamers to be in the game. Like even if you check, I think the number of players in Dota 2, as the years goes by, is like slowly declining, even though we still love the game. But again, right?
I guess it's just going to be another Bleach for us, I guess. Just in that
way.
The song that cling you to the game is nothing more than that. She says,
What would you be doing if, let's say, for example, what would you be doing if you didn't get a career in gaming?
So
Where do you see yourself?
Yeah, so where I see myself, I've always wanted to become a psychologist. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's still something that I do want to pursue at one point. My parents weren't very into the idea of me studying psychology. It's not something that the Arabic culture still understands very much, where it's like, mental health, what's that? No, just stop crying and stop being a little baby and you'll be fine. So
you can still say that you're a doctor. A psychologist is a doctor.
Yeah, but they wouldn't consider a real doctor. Yeah, they wouldn't think of it as a doctor. It's like you're just wasting your time. Right? So So yeah, if it's up to me, if ever Seoul Esports thing never worked out or it doesn't work out in the future, which I highly doubt, I would definitely consider going back and trying to give it a shot, you know, learn how to become a psychologist.
So you're not going to aeronautics or...
No. I did that just because my dad loves telling people, hey, this is my son, the aeronautical engineer. I'm like, Dad, I haven't worked one day in the field. I don't know what, what you're talking about, man. All right.
So that's an airplane.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, but being in a multinational company, it's nothing. Yeah, I get you, Dad. Arabic dad, you gotta do it, man.
Now, with all of this coming all together to become Mina that we know now, what is the biggest lesson that you have learned in esports and in handling an organization?
Don't listen to what everyone says is the norm. Just because they say, hey, this is just how people do it, this is how esports is supposed to be run, you should do it exactly this way, doesn't necessarily mean it's correct, right? For example, many people just say that you should be extremely strict with your players. You must make them follow the contract to the T. But let me tell you guys something out of my experience. The second you pick up your contract and tell your players, hey, you haven't filled out your obligations, you've already lost. You should never, ever, with an esports player, ever bring up the term of your contract. A happy player will never come to you and go like, hey, this is not in my contract. He'll never say that. He'll want to promote the esports team as much as he can because he sees that you are trying to help him as much as he can. And it's a norm in most esports teams to not do the same and to try to squeeze as much as possible from the player until the player himself just breaks down and can't continue anymore. So that's my number one advice for anyone in esports. Pave your own path, do your own thing. If you fail, you fail, but you did it. It was your failure. It wasn't someone else who told you to do something and you did it and you failed. At least if you do fail, you failed by trying to do something your way. So yeah.
Yeah. And I just really want to commend that sort of thinking, Mina, because that's not... Again, like, because for a lot of people, it's just, you know, money and business at the end of the day. So they don't see players as people. They're just like, follow this contract and that's it. And that's something very like, and I mean, I guess that's why, like, within the 4 to 5 years that you've been working in esports, you've gotten to the point where you have been because you understand everything from the player to, you know, the business side of things.
And I appreciate that. I really do. I was going to mention one more thing, which is when a player, right? So do you know what's the most volatile resource in the world? Human beings.
Mm.
Human beings are the most volatile resource in the world to work with. It is just how it is. You, for example, you guys can't tell me that tomorrow you're going to go to work in one mood and the day after tomorrow you're going to go the exact same mood the very next day. So many things happen in your life. Something could happen at home. Something could happen with your family. Something could happen with yourself. You could be sick. You could be whatever. There's no way you can classify a human being as going to give you exactly the same amount of effort every single day. And it's unfair of someone to consider a business where the main product is human beings, that their effort is going to be consistent every single day. You can try. You can do your level best. But it's insanely implausible to expect that this person is going to keep performing perfectly every day. And you need to always realize that. So when the day comes where they're not performing their best, you have the capabilities of giving them what they require so they can start playing at the correct level. Because esports in a day is a very mentally challenging thing. You only have your mind. You only have your mind. Once that's gone, you can't do anything.
Yeah, I agree. And especially since you are dealing with people, like, I feel like most companies lose the human touch, I would say. Like, they, as you have mentioned, that they're just there to work, but still at the end of the day, we are all just humans. And even in video games, like, you can't always win all the time.
Yes,
and
exactly.
There are days that you will have bad games, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there are days that you will just like boom, right? Gaming streak, winning streak, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
But there are days that it's just really bad.
Yes.
So yeah.
And you can't do anything about it. You just gotta be there for them. You can't just go like, "Hey, you messed up. Get the fuck out. Here's someone else." It doesn't work like that. It's just not how this industry is built.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the industry, I want to know, what is the industry like in the UAE and in the Middle East?
Okay, yeah. So to give you an idea, UAE is considered the commercial hub. So in a sense, most brands exist here. Most HQs for most brands exist here. For esports teams exist here as well. So it's a great place to create business. But most esports players don't exist here. They're majorly in the Levant and the rest of the GCC region. There are exceptionally very talented players in the UAE, but they're just a handful minority compared to the rest of the MENA. So, for example, my teams, they're majorly composed of players from Saudi, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, Syria, Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain, and we have a few players from UAE. But the majority is external, and so is most of the other esports teams in the region. So UAE does not have enough scope to be considered the industry. But if you consider the MENA region, where the UAE does involve itself a lot, since the HQ of brands exist here, and they sponsor most of these events, the industry as a whole exists in the MENA. Now, as for how it's been, I think the MENA is in a great position. I think we have grown so much in such a short period of time. I'm really excited to see how next year is. You can see it's very visible. The effort and the growth for each game is very, very visible in the region, and it's starting to just explode as years go by. So yeah, I think the MENA is in a very, very good position this time.
And how would you compare the industry here in the MENA region compared to other countries?
So we're talking about, so here's the thing, right? If we're considering MENA, comparing it to, like, for example, South Africa, or if we're comparing it to South America, or we're comparing it to Australia, where esports there isn't as prevalent, we would be, from where we're at right now, from our games and our publishers and our brands, we're in a much more educated and a much more developed region. But if we were to compare it to like China or Europe or the States, we're not even 10% there. They have a whole ecosystem. Yeah. They have a whole ecosystem. So for example, let's say, Amy, if you want to enter esports today in Europe, you'd already have a whole plot line. You'd have like several different paths. You want to get into PR. You want to get into marketing. You want to get into coaching, you want to get into playing, you want to get into managing an esports team. There are so many different ways to enter it. But in this region, we are just slowly starting the ability to have people to consider to hire. So, for example, esports, I truly believe when you try to hire someone, you don't look at experience because it just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You'll never have someone say, "Oh, I've had 10 years in esports." I'm like, how? Like, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta take with whatever you get. But the best part is you meet such amazing people in this industry because you hear their stories of why they're in esports. Most of them are so selfless. It's just like, I'm doing this because I want to be able to do things for players that no one did for me when I was a player. You know, and
it's all about the passion.
And that's such a beautiful phase for our region. It is. You can look at other regions and look like that it's just all about the money. And it's a sad situation, but it's the truth. You know, just people are in it because it's a massive industry. It's totaling to about $1 billion industry now. So it's huge right now. Again, I wouldn't say the MENA region is doing so bad that it's like below average, but I'm saying we're in a very good spot to be able to start growing even further in the future. I think it's a good place.
I see. And I was thinking, like, what is the percentage of gamers in the UAE and in the MENA region?
Okay. So there are a few studies. Not all of them are exactly the same. But so far, it states that 7 out of every 10 people are gamers in the region. Now, the reason why it's so high isn't because they're all console or PC gaming.
Mobile gaming.
People are playing Candy Crush or anything are considered gamers as well. So we don't have a proper percentage to look at, but it's good to see that 7 out of 10 people look at gaming as a way to downsize.
Relax.
Yeah, to relax, yeah. Right? So that's there. So it's fine. I think it's okay.
Would you consider someone who who goes to like GK and is like, I have like years of experience gaming. I play Candy Crush.
if the publisher, which is King, decides tomorrow to do $1 million tournament, I get Gavin. I ain't saying no, man.
That's not Candy Crush player.
Yeah. You're gonna find a new post on our website.
Who knows? They still keep on producing new levels.
Like people just take out their phones and they're like, look at my level.
But you know, like for example, what's interesting is maybe not Candy Crush, even though I've heard there are some tournaments worldwide. Tetris is actually one of the largest esports in the world.
It's
an interesting fact. Like you never know tomorrow. Like for example, let's say PUBG Mobile, which I would say hands down is the largest esports game in the world.
Yeah.
No one thought it would be anything. Everyone at the time was like, "No, PUBG, the PC PUBG was it was the best game to play." And now look at the world we're in. Every single person. I used to work at VR Park in the past in my old company, which is Robocon. And I used to come in early, and in the morning, people would sit in the food court before people would come into the Dubai Mall. And I'd see everyone, just all of these people who are staff and working there, they're just sitting there playing PUBG in the morning. Just like, wow, that's insane, man. Like, it's just casual people. We're talking about security guards. We're talking about people who work as cashiers. Like if they're not they're not very special people to be like, oh, this is a gamer. You know, this is just a person that's playing and casually wasting his time to be able to relax, you know?
But you know what's the equivalent of PUBG in the Philippines? It's Mobile Legends. Like there was even a time that, as you've mentioned, like if people were on break time, they're all on their phones playing PUBG. But in the Philippines, they had to open additional servers, especially during lunchtime, because they know people are playing at that time. And it's always crowded. Yeah, wow. They had to open up servers just for that. Imagine.
I mean, they're getting more money, so that's fine. I could completely imagine. I was very much considering that one day Mobile Legends would be quite massive here in the region, but I guess it's just it's not something they're really focused on. Southeast Asia, though, it's huge. It's massive. I've seen malls like shut down from tournaments of Mobile Legends happening in Southeast Asia. So I get you completely.
But how about Wild Rift? Is it not that popular here?
It's still growing. It is more, I think it's gaining more popularity all the time. Like, see, anything that Riot does, I'll be very biased because I know how hard they're working. I see them. Like, it's a full office dedicated to growing the region. Like, their main job is we want the MENA region to be popular. And that's like a commitment. Like, we're talking about not just one or two or three. It's a full office filled with staff dedicated to growing it. So not every publisher can do it. That's fine. But from the way they're looking at growing every game in the region, I think without a doubt, Wild Rift will slowly become the most popular game, most popular mobile game in the region for mobile, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I can see your cap.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oh my God. I love it. It's so comfy. I have some different hats, but this is the one that's just so comfortable to wear. So, yeah.
I've been wanting to play Valorant for quite some time, but I feel like I'm already too late to play it. I don't know. I just feel like my eye and hand coordination is really not gonna make it.
No, at this point. By the way, like what I like about Valorant, it is a bit more of a stricter version of Overwatch. But you never necessarily need to be a good shooter at Overwatch to play Overwatch. And Valorant is not as forgiving as Overwatch, but you can do a lot more things even if you aren't the best shooter in the game. And I think the way Riot are positioning Valorant, it is the best game to pick up. Like, it's so beginner friendly. It's so like, hey, we can still teach you and help you nurture the game. Unlike maybe other games like Dota or League of Legends, where the game is already built for people to play it. Like, hey, if you haven't played this for 10 years, what are you doing now? So,
That is so opposite of my story. I play Dota 2, I play League of Legends, but not Valorant, just because I feel like the learning curve is too steep. Like, girl, what are you talking about?
If you're focused on getting the kills, I could get that. I could completely get that. But
man, I came from C server. Remember that. I mean,
I know. I faced it. I think I've clocked almost 10,000 hours in Dota, so I know exactly what you're talking about. So yeah. Oh.
Exactly.
I remember when I was much, much younger, I specifically chose to play in US server just so I don't play with anyone from the CIS region or the Southeast Asia. So difficult. I don't mind playing the other thing. I don't care. I just want to play with people who understand the game. Like, I don't matter.
It can't be a casual gamer, no.
No, in C server, if you're a newbie, you're gonna die. You were like, this, I'm gonna quit this game. It's funny that we're laughing about it now, but actually the toxicity in the gaming community is something that also needs to be addressed, you know, because it keeps the game from getting new players just because of the community. Like, even for me, the only thing that's stopping me from playing Valorant is actually the gamers itself.
Yeah.
You know, the community.
Yes.
If I feel like I'm going to be, you know, just getting this amount of toxicity, especially when I'm just starting to play the game, then, you know, it takes out the fun in that.
No, I completely
It's only
agree.
Fun when you're trash talking.
if you're playing well and the other guy's playing badly and you're giving him then you know what? It's valid.
Valid if you're playing good.
If you're playing bad, you shut up, you finish the game and go home. But yeah. In terms of toxicity, I've seen it actually affect people so much. Of course, what I mentioned earlier is only between my friends. I don't think I would like turn on the mic to a random dude and just go like, what the frick are you doing? But I've seen a lot of my friends quit the game they love just because of the community that they play, you know, and they just can't. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bro, why don't you just mute the game? And he's like, I can't, because I need to be able to talk with people in the game to understand how to play it at my pace. Why can't I just play with people who are normal? And it's a shame, but it's the situation that we're in as people. Gaming can be one of the most relaxing things to do to pass your time, but it can also be something that's extremely stressful. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen a lot of memes where it's like, oh man, I've had a hard day at work, I'm gonna come home and play some relaxing
game. And just more stress.
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, I am experiencing that a lot. Like, I mean, you can only be, I guess, be able to stress relieve yourself if you're playing RPGs or single players, not games from Software.
Yeah.
Those games are just like super crazy hard. It's like, man, I'm not getting my stress out enough. It's just giving me more stress. But yeah, I remember speaking of toxicity, I remember when I first started playing Dota 2.
Yeah.
I almost quit after 3 months just because of the toxic people, because I couldn't handle it. Like, I'm a newbie, so what do you guys expect? I mean, I cannot learn all of, up until now, I haven't even played all of the heroes, I guess, in Dota 2.
Oh, you man. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that's how many it is. And like,
you can... what the time that you have to like spend just to do that, though.
Correct.
That's one more thing. So there was a point that I can only play it when I'm with my friends.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have my friends with me, I'm just going to grab, you know, my PlayStation and play with that instead of me stressing myself out for a game that it's not enjoyable. But if it is enjoyable if you're with your friends.
Yes. You know? Yes, it is. It is. I agree completely. You know, the thing is, I remember actually talking about it with one of my college professors because we used to play Dota. And there was one time I got really bummed out from one person who was like, there's flaming and then there's just like, whoa, relax, like genuinely just wishing death on your family and just it's just so much. And I just like, what is wrong with this individual, you know? And it was weird. And he just told me, just like, man, listen, just don't feel bad for yourself. Feel bad for that person because God knows what the person's going through. And, you know, it gives you perspective, you know, like obviously doesn't validate what he's saying. But, you know, it just makes you, like, kind of realize, like, if someone's at that point in their lives that they have to be online in a video game and scream at random people and tell them such very, very disturbing things, it tells a lot more about that person, yourself. Obviously, talking about it now while we're in a rational state of mind is fine. Not when you've spent, like, 55 minutes in a video game and the guy just decides to just completely... Just show the game after you practiced and tried so hard to win. It's a bit difficult to think of it at the time, but it's perspective to just, at the end of the day, it's just someone. It's a human being that's not doing it's not going through something well, and this is the result of it. So
But I think one thing I just want to say, though, that even though you're not going through things well at some point of your life, it's still not valid for you to be that toxic in-game. Especially for me, I've experienced it, especially when I try to open the bike in Dota 2. Them knowing that I'm a girl playing Dota 2. Oh, and they will be like sexist comments. So if guys have this, let's say, for example, if you guys are affected by comments like these, what about us? It's more like maybe twice or three times because it's about our gender and it has nothing to do with us playing video games, you know?
Correct.
So what would you say about the women in the region and when it comes to gaming? Like, what is your insight on that?
I'm in a very special position to state also that not only does GK really promote female gaming, we also have... We were the first team in the Middle East to have a full Arab Valorant roster for esports. And we're very proud of the girls. They're so much better than me. They kick my ass. They did kick my ass. They did. But I heard a lot of stories and I've seen a lot of things and I've witnessed it, especially in Dota, because I don't know how they do it in League. I'm still so curious about how do they affect someone in League, because League doesn't have voice chat. But Dota and Valorant do. And I've noticed that a lot of girls just don't use voice chat, even though they want to. It's like they want to speak because they need to communicate. It's a game. Esports is a very vocal, communicative game. If you can't tell them something that's happening at that second, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And told me about their experiences where they just want to play a game. And literally in the loading screen, they just join the loading screen and they just say, hey, who's picking what, you know? Immediately, they attack her just because she's a girl. Has nothing to do with anything else. And a lot of the professional girls that I play with that we have in our esports team genuinely mentioned that it was very difficult to continue in esports just because of the kind of toxicity they face on a daily basis. You know, they're like, even if it's not directly that they're women, you know, like they're like they just have to keep randomizing what happens. Either it's someone who's just completely blantingly toxic because they're a woman, or they're overly nice because they're a woman.
And yeah, that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, that's the other side.
Which you know, is like boost morale for gamers.
Yeah, exactly. And like, bro, like, they're like, we were coming to play a video game that we're good at, not to help some guy that thinks this is a dating service, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what's weird is that I've heard it from the other side, which is from the male perspective. You hear a lot of guys that go like, I really wish I'd get to queue up a game and get up in a game with a female. I'm just like, but okay, but why specifically? It's just like, oh, because we'll have mutual interests. And I'm just like, this is the thought process of that guy. But the girl's just like, I want to just play a video game. And the thing is, these types of clashes happen in a video game. And they just ruin the experience for everyone. So obviously the girl's not going to just be uncomfortable and keep quiet. That guy is going to be super upset because he wanted to get with the girl. And the whole game is just going to be this super tension-filled drama that didn't necessarily need to happen. So from that perspective, I think when the gender-specific roles enter, where a guy is trying to judge a girl just because she's a girl in a game is absolutely wrong. And it's actually affecting female esports in a very weird way. Because the other reason that Valorant is somewhat exists in the region is because Riot is promoting a tournament, which is called Game Changer. Which I love, by the way. Mm-hmm. Only more esports publishers do this. It's a great initiative. It's a 60,000, was it a dollar or euro? I'm not sure. I'd say it's euro or dollar tournament that happens in EMEA, where they're open to all teams from the Middle East, plus Africa, plus Europe, to compete in a purely female-oriented tournament. To just promote...
Yeah, I think I've seen that promotion for that tournament. Yes. And I also remember, like, I'm not sure if this was last year or 2 years ago, that in Abu Dhabi, they opened a female-centric gaming cafe.
Yes.
That it's only for women. Do you know which cafe what it was?
I can't remember. I really don't remember. Yeah, but I remember it's very... They did an event with Benefit a while ago. I don't know if it was a content... Yeah, it was just a pure content creator thing or it was a tournament. But... No, it was a very big move. Even though there was also a festival that happened a few years back called Girl Gamer,
and I've seen that too.
Mm. Yeah, it was fantastic. And the thing is, you know what I really hate, and I really really don't like it, is when guys start to say, "Oh well, if women are so good, why are they playing in a woman only tournament?" And it's not like the same concept as sports, where because men and women are biologically different, men play in a different concept and women play in a different concept. It's literally just to keep pushing women to play. It is not to say that women are inferior to men. It's just to celebrate women playing and to give them like a platform to keep playing, keep practicing. You'll reach a certain plateau and then you can start playing with esports teams comfortably. Not that they can't play with esports. There's a lot of teams that try doing like mixed teams and having a almost an entirely female roster, and they competed pretty well against male teams. I think just because of the pressure externally, those teams had to crumble, or mixed teams just might have some internal issues. But it's not unheard of to hear like some female players dominating a full male region. Our female team that's composed majorly in the Levant region played for the qualifiers for Insomnia, which is an esports team tournament that happened in Egypt, and we reached all the way to the semifinals of the qualifiers, meaning they beat a lot of male composite teams, and it's just young. I think that's it. I just think organized female esports is young, and I think once it has its time in the sun, you're not gonna just find an extremely male dominant industry.
And I think this is also something that I always mention, that we just think that there's not a lot of female gamers just because they're not out.
Yes.
You know, like they're not very vocal about it. Like even Amy, I didn't know that she was playing video games after how many months of knowing her.
Yeah.
I was like, girl, you also play video games? And she's like, yeah, I do. Like, see, see, that's why. And another thing is, like, there are some females who are getting attacked if they say that, yeah, I'm a gamer, you know, and then someone or somebody will just say something stupid like, really, you're a gamer? So which games do you play?
Yeah, name for me every single character in Dota, and name for me every single person who created a single hero in Dota right now, this second. Let's go.
Like, what? To test the knowledge. I mean, I can beat your ass in the game, you know?
No, and people can be casual gamers. I mean, if guys can be casual gamers, I mean, not every single guy is a, like, gamer.
Correct.
Why can't they apply the same rule with girls? Like, why is it, if you're a gamer girl, you have to have all this knowledge, you only spend time, like, playing video games, and you don't do anything else? Like, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. And when you ask them, like, even from a guy's perspective, because, like, I think most guys are comfortable to speak to guys when you ask these questions. They all have, like, different weird answers. They don't necessarily have, like, a unified answer where it's like, oh, because she's a girl, she's bad at gaming. It's just... Sometimes it's just something as stupid as, like, oh, I just don't think a girl can beat me at video games. Oh, okay, cool.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think it's just, from an esports perspective, though, I think we're doing much better. I think professional female players and professional male players are starting to play on a much better scale with each other. I think there's a lot more professionalism there. So the higher the ladder goes for female players and male players, the less toxicity exists. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that's nice to consider, at least. So, like, it's not like we're just all gloomy. There's, like, a little bit of ray in sunlight where if you do want to play at one point professionally, do realize you'll play with people that aren't going to waste your time, aren't going to insult the crap out of you 24/7 basis. There will be bad games, but everyone wants to just finish their game and go to the next one. So toxicity will be a lot less, and you'll be able to perform on a better scale. So,
since you mentioned, like, things are getting better, and, like, the thing is, like, I've noticed with the way you answer, I guess because you're, like, really into psychology, that you always put, like, both perspectives into play.
Correct.
Given that it's getting better, what do you think needs to be improved in the esports industry? In both the UAE, the MENA region, and worldwide?
Okay, I think there needs to definitely be a union. Definitely. There needs to be a union for players and for esports org. Mm-hmm. Someone to help hold everything accountable. So for a very long time, esports has been like this completely unregulated concept. Like, tomorrow I can have a player that I pay $50 to and it will be completely acceptable. And tomorrow I can have a player that I pay $200,000 and it's also completely acceptable. And they could literally be teammates, and no one's going to tell me, no, you're not doing this correctly, or whatever. It's situation. And same goes from the player. The player doesn't have any rights. Yeah, everyone is contracted. Everyone has, like, rules specifically, but no one's really going to... You need to get lawyers. You're going to need to do a whole shebang to be able to get someone's rights just to get money back. There's no worldwide authority on esports. Which is fine. Like, it's just how most industries grow. Like, football, when it started, people were getting paid with beer cans. It's different. Now we're talking about, like, multi-million-dollar salaries. Esports is very much going to reach that level, if not higher as well. So that's there from a global perspective. As from Amina, this is going to be extremely personal opinion. Like, it's just something I've seen. Not many people would agree with it. I think as an esports org, you have to be very selfless. You have to be very selfless. You can't look at a player. You can't look at someone and say, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to pay him this amount, which is very generous of me, so that he remembers me later on. Newsflash, they don't really care. And sometimes if they do, they're not entitled to help you. You have to do this job knowing that you're doing this for the sake of either growing the industry or trying to be in it. Nothing else. You're not looking at it to be able to go like, oh, one day I help this player become the best player in the world. Or, oh, this player owes me his life because if it wasn't for me, he'd be playing in some gaming cafe. It's not how it works. And there's a lot of esports organizations, if not most, think exactly in this manner. And it's very, like, you know how we just talked about toxic gaming? This is what I would say is toxic esports. And it's very wrong for someone to think this way. When you're talking about a player or working with a team, you need to be able to give them your all so they can, in return, do the same. But not forcibly. You know, okay. So do you guys watch One Piece? I embody Luffy's, what's it called? Vision, view in life. Where I'm going to get to the finals. I'm going to get to the end. Do you guys want to come with me and see what it looks like? So they'll see that I'm working my ass off to get there. And they, in turn, will do the same thing. And I think that's just the right way of looking at esports in this region specifically, because there is no other way of looking at it. There is no, hey, we're doing this for the money. Hey, we're doing this because there is a lot of money and we can make more money. It's money will come. Of course, it's a business. You need to consider money. It will come. But your players and your teams are also extremely important to consider, that they have to be at their best to reach the level best. And they will only do that by being led by example.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And now I just want to move on to the next section of our episode, which is the questions from the Facebook group that we posted your interview, which is the Gamers Lounge Dubai. So I just want to thank first the admins of the group, to Fahad Durrani, for allowing us to post this interview. And the first question that we got is from Azim Saif Ula. Not sure if I mentioned your name correctly. So some of the gamers in the region feel like the prize pool isn't as high as in other countries. Why do you think that is so? And do you see it changing in the near future?
I see that our region is growing so fast. It's insane. Just to give a comparison. So esports here didn't really exist in the past. Giving an idea. All tournaments that happened here were marketing campaigns that targeting gaming audience. That was how all tournaments were composed in the region. Now, let's say I'm a brand. Yeah, my main audience is between 16 to 30. And I want a majorly male-oriented audience. And I want to make sure they're above average pay scale. From that perspective, you're going to look like, as a brand, which audience can I tap into that perfectly? That would be gamers. Gamers have always cash ready to spend. They're always, usually have a, you're not going to find people who are if they're working harder than usual to be able to make some sort of money, they're not going to spend their free time gaming. They're going to try to make more money. But the above average pay scale usually has time to spend on gaming. And it's just how study works. So most of the tournaments that happened in the past, especially in Dubai, were majorly marketing campaigns with an attached price pool, which is considered an expense from the brand. Now, if we take that, we consider what tournaments look like in Europe. Massive tournaments in Europe sometimes don't have a prize pool, but they have a massive audience. And those tournaments are done in a way to be able to play for a bigger tournament later. Yeah? Like, for example, if we were to take the international, right, for Dota. You didn't need to, back in the day, you didn't need to play, you didn't need to play for tournaments for millions of dollars to go to play the international. You just needed enough DPC points to be able to qualify to the international. That does not necessarily mean you have to play for hundreds of thousands of dollars. You just need a certain amount of points to lead there. What happened was, and it sucks, is that the MENA region was never into any of these circuits into the international World Cups. Dota, League of Legends, Valorant wasn't there at the time. CSGO, CS 1.6, Rainbow Six, I'm trying to see if there's more, there's definitely more games that I'm missing out on, but all of these games never had a link to go internationally. If you were in the Middle East, let's say 8 years ago, you'd never be able to play on an international level. And it's just, It's just a situation we were in. Now it's starting to change because publishers are trying their level best to add the MENA into the total, the circuit, the worldwide circuit. So for example, Valorant, my team, if they win this regional tournament, they'll have an opportunity to play against international teams. And that's huge for this region, right? Dota, nothing like that exists here as of now. But I know for a fact it's starting to be worked on now. So to answer Azim's question about prize pools, it was usually just about, be very honest, how much the marketing company was willing to spend in their marketing budget for the prize pool. Sometimes they didn't want to spend, sometimes they did. But never has a publisher been like, yeah, we're going to add this region into the whole circuit worldwide, and therefore it never had value to add a massive prize pool in this region. And that's just the truth.
Yeah, and I think as we go along this episode, we have mentioned it many times that I think the esports here is at least in the toddler stage.
Yes.
I would say, you know, like it's still, you know.
Yeah.
And another question from the group, and this one is from Augusto Capalbo. He mentioned that so the question is, we understand that not having VoIP is important for cybersecurity in the UAE. However, some gamers may find it difficult not having the voice option in-game. So what do you think about it, and what can gamers do in the meantime to go about this situation?
So I think many companies that I've spoken to personally were not initially aware that gamers had such a huge aspect of VoIP to do esports or gaming. I think from their perspective, they blocked VoIP from a different perspective, which obviously was to promote and to make sure that the national telecom carriers were the main sources of telecommunications. They didn't necessarily understand that gaming was the main point. I think now it's not been as strict as before. It used to be very strict. I think Discord still works, not as obviously as it works in Europe, but it still exists. And I don't think any in-game VoIPs are blocked, though. I think Dota still works, Valorant still works, PlayStation still works.
But people use Discord.
Yeah, Discord.
Yeah.
Let's discuss just Discord, because I think Discord is the number one example. I think they're working on some sort of aspect to make it work again in the region. But the thing is, they know it's for gamers. I know for a fact that the telecom companies know that Discord needs to be accessed for gamers to continue playing in the region. And I know they're working on it, and I know they want to make it work. But the thing is, again, you have to convince higher-ups why this VoIP specifically needs to be unblocked. Why not unblock all VoIPs? Why is it just this one? And it's difficult to explain, well, this is for people to game. And you're just like, okay, all right, yeah. That doesn't make the case for me.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah, cool story, bro. Like, I don't see it that way. But I genuinely think it's going to change very soon. And don't quote me on this, but I think once a telecom partner in the region really pushes esports, specifically in the UAE, really pushes esports, we will find that Discord will slowly but surely also open up in the region. I think that's when the transition will happen. But for now,
That's something to look forward to, though.
Sorry?
That's something definitely to look forward to.
Oh, definitely. We can see that in Saudi and in Kuwait. STC, which is one of the biggest telecom companies in the Middle East, is promoting the Saudi E-League, which is the Saudi tournaments that happen every several months. And their tournaments go up from hundreds of thousands of dollars for several different titles. They do Overwatch, they do Rainbow Six, they do PUBG Mobile. And it's largely in thanks also to STC. And then we have Zain, the telecom company from Kuwait, which is also sponsoring one of the best esports teams in the region. And they're also doing a lot of tournaments for PUBG with their new IP, which is Zain Esports. So I think it's just left for our telecom companies to start also investing into esports.
Realizing.
Yeah. And then it'll come soon. I don't think it's that far away. I think in like the next while it should start working. They should start operating in esports.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially even in the Philippines, telecommunication companies are supporting gaming.
Yeah.
Like they are sponsoring events, making promotions for, you know, prepaid loads for people who play Mobile Legends. Imagine partnering in that sense, you know. But again, at the end of the day, business is still business, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And speaking of the future, I mean, like here in the UAE and VoIP services, what do you think is Geeky's vision for the future? Do you guys have any exciting plans?
Can't say, but I can tell you both of them are there are two specific events that we want to do that are targeted towards growing this region internationally, and the second one is to further educate this region in esports, and I think they both. As much as I would say, not many brands would do this because it's not necessarily the best way to make money, for example. It's a very complicated campaign. But in the long run, if these two campaigns work out correctly, we're looking at changing how the industry looks at esports and gaming. And I'll be very honest, I'm very blessed to work in not just in a company that everyone is a gamer. Like, I'll be honest, everyone in our company is a gamer. but also that my CEO, which is Kishan Deepak Balaji, he is a visionary when it comes to gaming. Absolutely, man. Like, he knows where to go. It feels great to work with someone on a daily basis that has the right mentality and knows the right way of going. You know, it's reassuring because just like I said earlier, where you have to create your own path no matter what anyone else tells you, it's good to know that someone is willing to go along with it and carve his own and to make it all come back in one place. So GK itself is taking it upon themselves to change how esports looks like. And not many brands in this region, I would say, are going to do it as passionately or as deeply as our company is going to do it.
I'm just excited for what the future holds for esports.
Correct.
You know, like, and as we all have been talking about, still in its baby steps, and who knows, maybe in the next 2 to 3 years or in the next 5 years, it's a huge thing at this point or at that point. Now, since we're talking about in the future, I bet people will be curious, how can they be one of the talents that can be part of the esports industry? So what advice would you give someone who is, you know, thinking of getting a career in gaming?
Don't do it for the money. Don't. There is a lot of money. There really is, and you'll make it, but don't do it for it. And don't do it without considering how it would look like financially for you too. I know it's kind of conflicting, but it's true. If you're going to enter esports because this is a $1 billion industry, you can make money. Second thing is enter the industry trying to do something where you grow itself without it letting it affect you financially. For example, I've had people that went like, you know what, I'll work for free and I'll be able to do all of these things for you and not an issue. And like, it's very sweet. You're very passionate, but you're not thinking of it for yourself in a long-term perspective. You got to consider how you can make it sustainable. It is at the end of the day a business. You need to treat it as such. And from that perspective, you'll be able to grow. Now, for someone to enter into esports right now, you have to also realize there's never going to be like, oh, I specialize in PR, so therefore I will only do PR. That does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You enter esports, you do everything under the sun. You manage players, you manage you go to events and you're literally building the PC. You do everything. And that's just because of where we are right now. So to be able to enter esports, realize you're going to do it not for the money. So that means you're not looking at it getting paid as a good amount, nor are you doing it to be able to financially loosen yourself up. So you also can't do it for less money either. And you're doing it to learn. You're doing it majorly to learn. So you can never go like, that's not my job, I'm not doing it. You gotta be able to do everything and more. Just like we said, esports is still in a toddler stage in the region. And it's good, but that does not mean you can enter and just expect that you're gonna get a 9-to-6 job and leave. It's hard work.
Yeah.
You never stop working technically. You just, there are times where you work from the office and there are times you're still working from home. And that's the life of esports. That truly is the life of esports. And as soon as you accept that, you're in the right industry. You can't, you're not in the right industry. And you can't continue in this industry. It's just, I know it sounds like a very toxic culture, like a work culture, but it's not something that the company imposes on you. It's like your own discipline. You have to take it upon yourself. Like your company can literally tell you, no, don't work today. You have to be at home. Cool. Well, I have 3 monitors set up right now in front of me, and they're all assorted to game, to working, and 1 for gaming, of course. But it's esports. you gotta keep doing it, man. It's hopefully in the future won't be the same situation, but it's just my advice. Obviously, from my background and the story I just told you guys, there were nights I didn't sleep, and there were days that you just did so much work. I remember one time I got this call from, at the time, one person I was working for in esports, and he told me, Mina, the brand asked for this many people to enter the tournament. You don't come back with this many people from the tournament, I don't want you to come back into the office at all. This stating, this was 12 o'clock at night in Abu Dhabi, and we had the tournament the very next day. So it's a difficult business. It is, but it's very rewarding as soon as you can be able to see what you imagine happening.
I mean, based on your story, that's a lot of hard work, but I guess this is the part where your hard work is paying off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still there. The hard work is still there. It's not, it's not going to end. But the thing is, as you have mentioned, the rewarding feeling that you will get afterwards, it's not something that you can buy with money.
No, not at all. Never, never. You get to be one of the people to say you built this region. You truly get to say it. Because you can't say that in Europe. If I go to Europe and I want to work in one of the biggest esports teams there, probably will get an opportunity to do so if I ever do try. But I'm just a part of the system at that point.
Yeah.
And that's
fine. You're not
fine.
The one who started it.
Nah, you're not. And you're not a part of the people who are making it a difference in people's lives.
Okay, so thank you so much for that advice. For someone who is thinking of entering the esports industry. And moving on to the final part of our episode is, we usually have anime recommendations on our episodes. I know it's a bit far off. We were talking about all about gaming, and now, what anime do you like? No, that's how the system, how the format is. So, okay, if you can recommend one anime for our audience to watch, what will it be?
Konosuba.
Konosuba?
I love it. I love it so much. It's the only anime that can make me laugh so hard I'll drop to the floor. Also, it's the animated, It's like, it's about, it's an RPG game that's happens to be real life. I love it so much. I also relate a lot with the main character, so I just genuinely love the show. So that's there. Or Fairy Tail. Or Fairy Tale. Yes.
I mean, I really love Fairy Tale. It's just that the fan service part is really, like, sometimes it's...
Yeah, it's too much. I also agree. But I'm not going to say I don't like it. I'd like it.
He is the fan they are servicing.
Yeah, he just exposed himself, so...
Guys, like, all of the statues you see at all of these stores, I'm the one buying them, man. Like, you gotta tell me about it, bro. Like, you're gonna have to meet my favorite Digimon character. I'm gonna tell you it's Angelomon. I can't.
I feel like we should have a separate episode only for anime. This episode was all about gaming, and next episode, I wanna know about this.
I spent so much time in the office with the ones in charge of merchandise. And they're just like, bro, you do esports. Just go sit there. I'm like, no, but like, see that statue? It's fantastic. You should. And so he's like, no, it's not allowed to sell in Dubai. I'm like, bro, just listen. I'm telling you, it'll sell. And don't do it. No, but yeah.
Okay, how about you, Amy? Any anime recommendation?
I think I will recommend Sword Art Online. Just because it's about gaming. It's it's sort of like a VR game where they get stuck in the game. Yes, pretty much the same. I'm not a fan of the fan servicing in that, but I mean, like, the idea of it, like being stuck in a game and all that, it's a pretty cool anime in that sense.
Yeah. I couldn't watch it. It was just, first season was fine, and then I don't remember why I stopped, but it was nice.
No, it's nice for like half the season, the first season. Then later on, it becomes like a love story, which also I didn't enjoy, but I finished it just for the sake of finishing it. Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
Well, since this is a semi-gaming obviously it's a gaming episode, so I'll be the most predictable here. I'll be recommending Dota 2 series in Netflix. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I did. I watched season one. I couldn't watch season two. After watching Arcane, I couldn't go from that level of animation. I couldn't.
Sadly, that's the truth.
It is the truth, man. It is.
Oh well. I'm still excited for Dota 2 anyway. I mean, TI11 is gonna be in Singapore, right?
Yes. This time I'm gonna actually go for. I was supposed to go for the last one, but COVID made it almost impossible. So I'm glad to be able to watch this one. Yeah, so it'll be fun. Yeah.
All right. So thank you so much for watching this episode. Thank you so much, Mina, for being here today and sharing your story to our audience. I just want to invite everyone to follow us on our social media at Ara Ara Podcast. That's on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We don't have Twitter, right?
No. TikTok.
Snapchat. But before we end the episode, anything else you want to plug, Mina?
It's just been a pleasure. Really grateful for this time. And I hope more people do something related to educating people in esports. I really do thank you guys for this opportunity.
Thank you.
How about you, Amy? Anything you want to say?
Just that you can follow me at Hasta La Vista Amy as well.
And for me, that's Viv's Black Mage. Follow me on Twitch and on Instagram. So thank you again, guys, for watching or listening for today's episode, and you have a nice day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.